Good afternoon. You're listening to Gambling with an Edge. Now here are your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, Richard and I dip into our mailbox again. We have lots of questions from our listeners, and we're going to be answering them. Before we start, Richard has something to say about commercials.
Yeah, a number of people have contacted me and said, oh, you know, there's this new commercial at the beginning of the show or the end of the show, and I didn't know you had Progressive Insurance as a sponsor and things like that. So we signed with a company called Blue Wire, and they handle commercials for us that go before the show starts and after the show finishes. And they have a whole bunch of different sponsors that they put in a rotation. So every time you listen to the show, even if it's the same show you heard before, it could be a different commercial at the beginning or at the end. Now, somebody did let me know that they heard a commercial for a tout service, and I contacted Blue Wire, that's the company, and I said, we absolutely do not want any advertisers that are selling sports picks, nor do we endorse anybody who is selling sports picks. So I just wanted to make that clear. Hopefully they have taken care of that so that that doesn't happen again. But I also just wanted to mention that just like on YouTube, if you listen to the show on YouTube, YouTube also sticks a commercial at the beginning and at the end. On YouTube, they're skippable. You can just hit a little button on there to skip through it. But just because it has been tacked on to the beginning or the end of the show, it does not necessarily mean that we endorse whoever that happens to be. So, yeah. So I just wanted to let everybody know because quite a few people have been asking me about it.
Very good. Let's get to the question. Starts out video poker. I play 9-6 quarter single line jacks or better progressives in Atlantic City. In a 12-month period, I have hit exactly 21 royal flushes. I play 2 days a week for about 9 hours a day. I play at 800 hands per hour. What are the odds of hitting this many royals on a single line game? Am I just lucky or am I riding positive variance?
Isn't that the same thing? Being lucky and riding positive variance?
I suppose. Multiplying 9 hours times 2 times a week times 52 weeks and then dividing that by the 21 royals you received comes out to a royal cycle of about 36,000 hands. Now, while 9-6 jacks with a 4,000 royal has a royal cycle of 40,000 hands, playing progressives lowers that because at certain progressive levels you change your play as you go for the royal. Assuming you make the changes in your strategy as the royal level increases, it seems to me like you're pretty close to spot on the number of royals. Not knowing exactly the strategy you use at various royal flush levels, I can't give you a more precise level than that. So this is a normal situation. Next question. How do you qualify a guest's credentials before their appearance on the show? I'll let you strike on that one first, Richard. Congratulations.
Well, so we get guests in a number of ways. The main way is it's somebody that either Bob or myself know. That's number one. Number two is it's somebody who's written a book we're interested in. So we get a hold of them and have those people on the show. And then the third way is we get recommendations from somebody who says, hey, I think this person would make a great guest. An example of that would be Toupee Jay, the pool player. Neither of us knew him or even knew of him, but somebody that we knew recommended and said, hey, this guy would be interesting on the show. So that's the third way. And that's the way I personally think we need to be a little bit more careful about to sort of, you know, vet them a little more thoroughly. But you know, it's hard to find 52 guests a year. So sometimes when we get desperate, you know, maybe we'll end up with someone who maybe wasn't the best the best choice.
And another time, another way we do it is sometimes people send us emails and say, I'd be a good guest on the show. And so we write back to them, well, what would you talk about? And they send us their experience as to what why they think they'd be a good guest on the show. And less than half the time we say yes. And but we do say yes sometimes. And sometimes if it's close or we think they might have an accent from a foreign country, we'll Skype with them in a pre-show interview just to see, or sometimes we'll take them to lunch. And sometimes afterwards we'll go never again with that one. But and sometimes we say that guy was really good. So also your comments as to which one is good and which one is bad helps a lot. Like we already knew this, but several people have said about our last show with Steve Sears, that was a great interview. Have him on more. And we already agree with that, and we can use more questions to ask him. But and if you go, this guy really sucks, well, that matters too. So good, let's go on.
I do just want to say a comment on that. It seems like almost every guest, you will have some people who really like them and other people who really do not like them. So there's almost never 100% in either direction, you know. So the vast majority of comments we got on Steve Sear were positive, but he does have his detractors. So,
all right, new question. One time I heard a guest talk about a newer card game available at a casino. Can you think of any more recent or newer casino card games and maybe give us a brief general description on how they are played? Well, I can't do this as I'm not looking at table games. One source for this information is wizardofodds.com. Mike Shackelford looks for games he hasn't seen before and he analyzes them. In about a month, there's a gaming show in Las Vegas called G2E for Global Gaming Exposition. I will be going and looking at all kinds of games. And as will, I don't know if Richard's going. We hope to have on Buddy Frank, who is a former slot director and a casino manager. And he's re-looking at the same games. He has a very different viewpoint than we do, and it's fun to talk to an industry insider as to see what he sees. So we will find some new games next month that we'll tell you about. But right now, I'm not looking at table games, and I don't think Richard's out there scouting either.
Yeah, as for G2E, I'm kind of over it. You know, every year I go there, there's a dozen new games that are just never going to see a casino. You know, and I kind of feel like it's a waste of time for me these days. And certainly now with COVID, I won't be going this year.
Yeah, it's a bit different for video poker because a lot of the new games are from videopoker.com. And if they show them at the show, there is a really good chance they're going to be in casinos. So I want to get there and look at them and give the audience a heads up before they see them. All right, new question. Double Joker is a fun video poker game that is very popular here in Atlantic City. You rarely find it in Nevada. I was surprised to see it on Wynn Poker, and I've been practicing it lately. I'm having a hard time with hands that have one joker. I get that 10 is a very popular card to hold with a joker to increase your chances of getting the Wild Royal, but I'm stumped by the hands with unsuited cards. It seems that sometimes you just hold the jokers and sometimes you hold a 5 through 9. Is there any rule of thumb you can share so that I know which of these 5 to 9 cards to hold with the joker, if any? Well, I've never studied double joker because it's not a relevant game here in Las Vegas. I have, however, extensively studied kings or better joker wild and two pair joker wild, both of which sometimes hold single cards with one joker. In general, if you want the card in the appropriate, you want the card in the appropriate range with the least flush and straight penalties, with flush penalties being stronger than straight penalties, and straight penalties, adjacent straight penalties, are stronger than one card away straight penalties or two cards away straight penalties. So in a hand like Joker, 2, 6, 9, 10 of four different suits, you probably are going to hold the Joker 6. In the previous hand, if the 6 and the 10 were suited with each other, so we have Joker 2, 9 and a suited 6, 10, you're going to hold the Joker 9 or perhaps Joker 10, 6, depending on the pay schedule. Without knowing exactly which game you're talking about, that's the best I can do. Next question. I've been hearing for the past couple of years that the AGA is pressuring the IRS to raise the jackpot threshold from $1,200 to around $5,000. As you know, this limit was set in 1977 and desperately needs to be raised. I'm not a professional gambler and I can't file as one, so I usually don't play high denomination machines because I hate getting the taxables. Is there anything we, the gambling community, can do to pressure the IRS to do this? I keep hearing the change is imminent, but it ain't happening. Well, I sympathize with you. This Congress is in a bipartisan, or is in a partisan gridlock, and I find it hard to believe that it will get anything useful passed. Remember, you're asking for a tax cut on gambling, which many people consider a vice. It's hard to get a lot of support for lowering taxes on gambling, alcohol, cigarettes, etc. So yes, raising the limit for W2Gs is a nice thought. I don't like your chances.
Yeah, they were trying to lower it, right? There was talk about lowering it to 600, and fortunately that got
there was that for a while, and the casino shut that down. I have actually not heard it going up to 5,000. I think it would be a more relevant number, but the government is always looking for ways to support itself, and lowering taxes is, especially on vices, is a tough sell. Next question: what's the best way to listen to Gambling with an Edge? I've subscribed to YouTube channel and listen on Spotify. What else can I do? Richard, you're the expert on this.
Well, you have a lot of options. As you mentioned, YouTube, Spotify. Many people, I would say the majority of listeners, use a podcast app. The one I use is called Stitcher, which I think is great. You know, it downloads the new episodes for you automatically, so that you can listen to them offline. And then the other option would be to go to gamblingwithanedge.com and you can listen to it there on the website as well. But for me, what works best, I listen to a lot of podcasts. So it's nice to have them all in one place, downloaded automatically every week or however often they come out, so that I can just, you know, listen on my phone through Stitcher.
All right. For table game players, Resorts World is using RFID chips, and dealers color up players with ticket-in, ticket-out tickets rather than chips. What are your thoughts on this? Richard?
Well, yeah, obviously I don't like it. I don't know how easy those ticket in, ticket outs are to cash. I mean, if you have 20,000 in chips, they're going to give you a ticket out for 20,000. That means you can't go cash only 2,000 at a time or whatever. So yeah, it's really bad for players. But I haven't explored what all the options are, so I don't know. I mean, what happens if you're at the table and you say, "No, I'm going to keep using the chips. I'm going to keep playing." And or what happens if you do go to the cashier's cage with only 2,000 in chips and those kind of things. So, yeah. I mean, the future is coming, and eventually, eventually there will be no cash, and it'll make things that much more difficult for professional players.
Next question. When all is said and done, does card counting provide a return of one average bet per hour played or one maximum bet per hour played? Richard.
I've never thought about it in those terms, and it varies a lot depending on your bet spread, the penetration that you get on the particular game, and most importantly, the speed of the game. How fa are you playing heads up and getting 300 hands an hour, or are you playing at a full table getting 60 or 40 hands an hour? So I wouldn't think about it in that way. And then the best thing to do would be to get the QFIT, the Casino Verite software, and be able to plug in exactly what your spread is, what the penetration is, how fast the game is, and it'll tell you what you're earning. A better way to look at it is how much per one hand, 100 rounds, as opposed to per hour. And then you can figure out how many rounds per hour you're getting depending on the conditions of the table that you're sitting at. But to really look at those things, you want to use some kind of software. Casino Verite is one. I believe Blackjack Apprenticeship has also has some kind of software that can analyze that too.
Will the Mirage Poker Room ever reopen? I'll answer that first. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's my answer as well. I have no idea.
You know any $1 to $3 limit poker tables in Vegas? I don't, and I'm not looking for them. So they're possible they exist, but I just don't. That's not an area I look at.
So 1-3 limit?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not really up on limit either, but I would be surprised. I mean, almost everyone has shifted to 1-2 or 1-3 no limit hold'em. So I haven't seen 1-3 limit since, God, I don't know, since before the poker boom. Maybe it's out there. If it was, I would guess it would be at a place like the Orleans or, yeah, that would be my best guess if anybody had it, but I'd be surprised.
All right, the next is addressed to me. It says, if casinos kick out winning players and you're very public about being a pro, why do casinos let you play? Do they just consider it a marketing cost because you teach classes and cultivate what they think are losing players? And my answer is, many casinos do restrict my action. This is one of the costs of being a well-known strong player. And one who talks about it faces that even more. Next question. I don't understand what you're meaning when you say videopoker.com gives you correction on your play. Explain what correction is. Well, if you're playing a game, let's say you're playing NSU Deuces Wild, and you're dealt 3-4-7 of diamonds, and queen jack of spades. And you hold the queen jack. Correction means they will let you know that 3-4-7 is a better play. On the videopoker.com site, they give you the correction if you're a gold member.
And they will. Okay. It'll also tell you how bad your play was in relation, right? It'll tell you how much it's costing you.
The standard videopoker.com program will not. They have a red light, yellow, green light section, and green means it's perfect. Yellow means it's a miss, but not a terrible one. And red light means you're a terrible player. So that doesn't have the nuances. If you get the pro membership, which we talk about sometimes, they will actually tell you that it is a 14-cent mistake or whatever the number is. Here's a question for Richard. Today, I find myself with sufficient bankroll time and interest to pursue counting cards at blackjack. I recently became aware of Gambling with an Edge and have listened to almost all the episodes featuring card counters. I'm contacting you as I'm now actively training and seeking advice and guidance. I'm uncertain of where else to turn as I currently have no friends or colleagues in the card counting community. My intentions are not to ask for money or say, can I join your team? I just has questions that go beyond what you can read in a book and would greatly value the opportunity to speak with someone of your level of expertise. I recently joined Blackjack the Discord as Mr. B. Would you be open to a brief discussion over the voice chat on the platform? Alternatively, it's not clear to me who on the platform is a credible person or not. Perhaps you could recommend an active and credible counter that I might reach out to. In the event that you're able to assist, I would ask you please maintain my anonymity. So, Richard, are you looking for a student?
No. But I would say joining the Discord is a good thing to do. And when you join any kind of forum, in the beginning, I would just take it in, you know, just read what people are saying. Pretty quickly, you kind of realize – you know, who seems legitimate and who doesn't. You know, the other thing I would recommend is maybe joining the blackjackapprenticeship.com forums. You know, it is a pay site, but they are people who are serious about card counting. You know, the other thing is once you start seeing who you think is legit, then you can DM them, send them a direct message on the Discord. Same thing on, you know, the forum. And, you know, that's how you expand your base. Also on the Discord, people are often in voice chat. And you can go into the voice chat and you know, question, you know, try some questions there as well.
Yeah, I'm not on the blackjack forums, but in video poker forums, when somebody without a clue gives some advice, frequently a lot of the more senior players will jump all over them and explain that they're really off base. And so when you listen to, when you read what people write, you'll see the players that others mock, and you'll see the players are the posters who people have a lot of respect for. You can read the other posts. So that will help you decide who's good and who isn't.
Yeah, that's absolutely true in the blackjack forums as well. You can, you know, yes, they will jump on people who don't know what they're talking about, and you can see who other people are showing respect to.
Next question. I noticed recently some blackjack dealers on double deck games will burn up to a quarter of a deck, sometimes more, instead of only burning one card. I asked the floorman about this, and he said some dealers with smaller hands will do this because it makes it easier for them to handle dealing two decks. That sounds nonsense.
I wish they had allowed that when I was a dealer, because I have very small hands, and it is hard to hold a double deck when you're pitching. But yeah, anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm glad you said that. And you may have small hands for a man, but your hands are probably larger than many of the female dealers.
True. Yep.
Okay.
Actually, I have to tell you this story now. So, especially when I first broke in, you know, some girls are just tiny, you know, and I broke in at the Golden Nugget, and when a dealer, there were still, you know, idiot pit bosses who were very superstitious, and if a player was winning, they would come and tell you, change the shuffle, right? Like, that's going to change the luck of the cards or something. Anyway, there was this tiny little girl. She had brand new cards, which are very slippery, and it was six decks, and she was trying to put them into the shoe, and she picked them up, and they squirted out of her hand, and they flew all over the floor. And she turned around to the pit boss and said, do you think that changed the shuffle enough? So, yeah. Anyway, so, but to his, well, I guess, did you finish the question or did I keep
interrupting?
I haven't.
He wants to know how big of an issue is this in terms of counting the game accurately, and does this kill a game?
Oh, so it's the same as if those cards were on the bottom of the deck, and they're just cards that you haven't seen, right? So you're just counting seen cards, and it doesn't matter if they're on the bottom of the deck and get shuffled, you know, at the end, or if they're sitting in the discard rack. They're just unseen cards. The important thing is, how many total cards are you getting to see before they shuffle? So,
okay. Next question. I live in an area near Nashville with no casinos, but there are various casinos in different directions, all several hours away. I like to go play poker tournaments a few times a year, but other than that, I don't gamble often due to my job and having a family. Maybe you could discuss if there's any way for someone like me as a recreational gambler to have any kind of edge, or is basic strategy the best I can do?
No, of course you could learn to count cards. I don't understand why. I don't understand what one has to do with the other, but you could certainly learn to count cards. You could certainly learn to become a proficient video poker player. I mean, what's stopping you? It's just time, you know, to study.
Yeah, if he's in Nashville, one, the Cherokee Casino in Western North Carolina is within several hours, I suspect. Now, they have good video poker for on the $5 level, which means $25 a hand, which is not a level at which people start at generally. But they do have good games at that level. Next question. I don't play professionally, but I enjoy the game of getting amazing comps at a deep, deep discount. Over 13 years, I've enjoyed 267 fully comp nights with food at the best hotels on the Strip, several hundred thousand dollars in comps, plus financially about even, thanks to your teaching and products. Thank you. And I guess that's addressed to me, and you're welcome. Teaching others how to do this is part of what I find rewarding. And I get compliments like this, and I get criticism for the same thing, because other people would wish I would keep my damn mouth shut. So there you have it.
But I would just recommend to that listener that if you have not read Comp City, that book is made for exactly what you're talking about. So, yes, it's sort of out of date, but the concepts are not out of date. So, if you haven't read that, definitely pick it up.
Okay, my question involves split card poker. Of course, Resorts World is on my list. I've been disinvited to MGM and Cosmo, join the club, so options have become limited. And I see on VP Free that they're offering split card. Number one, is the return truly the same as the base game? Or is it similar to Quick Quads where you get a little extra? In exchange for higher variance. And number two, these games are fun, but the strategy seems quite complex. Is there any software program to teach correct holds? My answer is I do not know of any software that analyzes split card poker. The return on the game is right about the same as the base game, except you play 10 coins per line instead of 5 coins. To get that return, however, you need to make the correct holds. If you're looking at the games at Resort World, it's not going to be a good game. There are a few games in the high limit room. I think they call that Crockford's, where the games return more than 99%. On the main floor, you're lucky to get a game returning more than 98%. So this is not the casino I would look for to get great video poker games. Next question.
Wait, I have a question. So, you said the
Yes.
software doesn't handle split card poker. Does videopoker.com? Will they correct that split card poker?
No, they won't. I actually looked to see if it was included on their pro software, and it isn't, unfortunately. The pro software is it has lots of games that aren't anywhere else, including Quick Quads, including the basic Ultimate X, including lots of most of the ones I talk about are on the pro software, but Split Card Poker isn't. Next question. Really enjoyed listening to your interview with Junior and his perspective from surveillance. Do you know the name of the card counting software he was talking about that casinos use to catch card counters? I can only find MindPlay 21, but I heard they went out of business. Richard, do you know anything about this?
You know, it used to be called Blackjack Survey Voice, but I think they've changed the name. It might just be called BJ Survey, but that's what I believe it is.
Next question. I recently encountered a gentleman in a high limit slot section betting $125 per hand at video poker at a relatively slow rate. He said he made a six-figure income with his play style. My question is, how would such a play style compare to the average professional player betting much smaller amounts at a much faster pace? I assume variance is a big difference, but would the comps be comparable? Good question. Most of the casinos where they have reasonable games where you can bet $125 a hand, that would be a $25 single line game, have encouraged me not to play there. So I don't know of what's available at various casinos playing at that level. From what I have seen, it's you're not making a profit on the games themselves. The profit comes from the comps and the drawings and mailers and those kind of things. I'm sure there are players making six-figure incomes doing this, but I don't have the details on them. Most players playing dollars don't make anywhere close to 120, close to 100,000 a year.
There's something a little odd about that story because, you know, time is money. So playing slow means you're earning less money than if you played fast. So
well,
because
that part is true, but playing accurately is more important than playing fast.
Sure.
Unless you are really good, speed kills. If you're an expert player and can play 1,000 hands an hour perfectly, that's great. But most players, when they go above a certain level, find themselves missing 2 or 3 hands an hour, and they go ahead and hit it and goes, oh, damn, I missed that. And so that will eat up your profits. So you make 2 or 3 mistakes an hour, and that totally wipes out the difference between 1,000 hands and 600 hands an hour. So if you are good enough to play fast and perfectly, God bless you, that's the way to do it. But if you're not, it's much better to play slow and accurately than it is to play fast and make mistakes. Next question. If I bought in for $500 at a blackjack table, the Bellagio, for example, and was betting green chips and got lucky cards, and then proceeded to bet black chips and then multiple black chips on my winning streak, and I ended up cashing out for $75,000, would the casino issue me a W-2G? If they gave me a check for $75,000, would they report this to the IRS? If not, how would they handle such a situation as paying me? What triggers a reporting requirement to the IRS in such a situation? So, Richard, I'll let you go for this first.
Okay. Well, wow, that is quite a win on a $500 buy-in. But I would say Blackjack does not issue W-2Gs. So that there are no W-2Gs on Blackjack, no matter how much you win, unless you hit a side bet that, you know, or something like that, you know. But when you go to the cashier's cage, if you take a check, then no, nothing gets reported. The other option is they pay you in cash, in which case they do have to fill out a cash transaction report, and that does get reported to the IRS. It also gets reported, like, to the Justice Department or something like that. So, yeah, so that's the thing. It's about the cash. It's not about the size of the win or the loss. So no cash, no forms to fill out.
So assuming you're not hiding your identity, these cash transaction reports, CTRs, are nothing really to fear. They get zillions of those a year, and they don't really look at them really closely unless you're suspected of something, and then they can go back and check it. But for most players, it's not an issue. What becomes an issue is if you are hiding your identity and you're cashing out for $10,000 or more, you have to give them ID so they can create the CTR. And that kind of ruins keeping your identity a secret.
And by the way, if you cash out and they give you a CTR for your $75,000, and then you take that $75,000 to your bank and deposit it in your bank, you're going to get another CTR.
Next question. Ever since the Phil Ivey Baccarat edge sorting scandal occurred a few years ago, I've wondered why the card maker itself was not charged or sued for gross negligence. I know the casinos charged Phil and his partner with cheating, but I never heard anything about charges being brought against the actual company who manufactured the faulty cards. It seems that they're the real culprit in this case. So, according to Wikipedia, the Borgata did file a suit against Gemico for their losses in the Phil Ivey case, which happened in 2012. The judge says Gemico was not liable, and instead blamed Ivy and his partner. Jemico was also sued by the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City for a situation where all Jemico pre-sorted decks were pre-sorted the same, and when those cards were placed in a baccarat shoe, the results were predictable by the players because they're going to be the same results as they were last shoe. All this negative publicity has not been good for Jemico. They've been sold twice since 2012 and are currently owned by a company in Japan.
I just also want to say they were not charged with cheating. That's not correct. What happened was they stole Ivy's money. Well, in the case of Borgata, they sued Ivy to get their money back. But he was never charged criminally with a crime.
In the London case at Crockford's, they did charge him with cheating, and the judge rules that he was not cheating. All right. We are going to take a brief commercial break, and we've got plenty more questions. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning at least 99%. This is more such game than anyone else has. In September, every Sunday through Saturday, earn 1,200 points on slots, video reels, or video poker to receive a South Point 400 commemorative bottle of City Lights Moonshine, and you keep your points. Players can earn up to 3 bottles a week, and you can choose from 6 delicious flavors. I actually have picked them up for the first week. Not sure what I'm going to do with them. And these are quart bottles. These are pretty big. And they're either 80 or 82 proof, depending on which variety you pick up. So you can do a lot of damage with that. Richard, do you want some moonshine at your house? I got some.
No, thanks.
Okay. On September 26th, South Point 400 NASCAR Cup race is at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Tickets are half price at the casino box office if you use your points.
Hey guys, this is Colin from BlackjackApprenticeship.com, and if you're serious about card counting, I'd encourage you to check out the Blackjack Apprenticeship membership. It has the training tools you'll need to beat the game, like our comprehensive video course and our training suite, so you can learn each skill and virtually test yourself before ever stepping foot in a casino. It also includes the tools you'll need to succeed, like our pro betting software, casino database, results tracking software, and access to a community of like-minded advantage players to network with in our members forum and chat room software. You can find out more at blackjackapprenticeship.com.
VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Split Card Poker. This is a 10 coins per hand game where periodically on the deal or the draw, not both, you receive a split card. A split card may be any card. Once the split card is chosen, the additional card may be, with equal probability, the same card, one card lower, or one card higher. For example, if the Ace of Clubs is a split card, it's equally likely to become the Ace and the King of Clubs, the Ace and the Deuce of Clubs, or two Aces of Clubs. The only pay schedule addition is the Five of a Kind on non-wildcard games, and five deuces on deuces wild variations. We are back to our questions. A semi-local shop I play quite regularly has a $15 minimum table. Six deck, 8-17 game with good rules, including late surrender, double after split, double any two. Split up to four hands. My question is in regards to the side bet. The side bet is the 23 plus 3, aka Trilux, with the top 3 bonus bet. I realize these bets are overall negative EV long term. Table rules allow for your side bet to count towards the table minimum, so you can play a nickel on each bet and meet the table minimum. Is a guess a good play during a count that is slightly negative, say minus one or minus two, when you want to be betting minimum anyway, as opposed to just betting all 15 in the middle? I have successfully used the strategy to hit scores of $900 plus on hands I was expecting to lose anyway. I'm curious as to if this is an effective strategy, should I continue to play there? Now, I'm going to try this one first. According to the Wizard of Odds, the house edge on Trilux side bet varies with the pay schedule, number of decks, and the amount bet. The reason the amount of bet matters is that the dealer is paid $1 each time the player wins, no matter the size of the bet. For the best pay schedules from the player's point of view, 8-1 for all pays, on a $5 bet on a six-deck game, the house edge is almost 11%. Betting $5 on a minus 11% game to avoid having to bet $15 on a minus 2% game can't be smart gambling. If you won $900 plus on this game, you were betting much larger than $5 on the side bet, which is even worse. Richard, do you have anything to add?
Nope. I think that about covers it.
I've heard you comment that some banks don't like professional gamblers. I mentioned this to a friend who was a banker in Las Vegas for many years, and she says it's illegal for a bank to turn away a customer whose profession is legal under federal law. So a bank can refuse a marijuana grower for now, but not a gambler. How does this jive with your experience, and what does Bob Nersessian have to say on the topic? Richard.
Well, we can ask Bob Nersessian, but I can tell you that your banker friend doesn't know what they're talking about. I have numerous friends who have been barred from their bank. The bank tells them, we no longer want your action, just like they would in a casino. And the reason is because they have too many transactions that involve large amounts of cash, whether depositing it or withdrawing it. So, and I also know someone who was backed off from their bank for visiting their safety deposit box too often. You know, now, if you actually read the rules regarding a safety deposit box, it says you're not supposed to keep cash in them. And the bank decided if you're going in and out of your box that often, it means that you're keeping cash in there. So anyway, as I said, numerous people have been backed off from their banks. Wells Fargo seems to be the worst of all of these. But they all do it. Less so in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is used to more people with cash, but it even happens in Vegas.
Next question. I've been a recreational gambler for roughly 2 years now in a variety of games, blackjack, poker, slots, and sports. My question for you is, how feasible is it to turn into a professional gambler and make it a full-time job? And to do this, you have to be focused and knowledgeable about APs on only one game, or is it possible for a professional gambler to master multiple games? Now, I want to handle this first. My answer might be different from Richard's. The transition from recreational gambler to professional gambler is an impossible one for a high percentage of gambler. The level of practice and skill needed to beat games is much, much higher than most recreational gamblers realize. It takes no brains at all to be a recreational gambler, but most successful professional gamblers have a higher than average IQ, and frequently they've studied a lot and they've practiced a lot. When you ask how feasible the transaction is, it reminds me of somebody who asked how much something costs. And the answer is, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. With that said, there are new professional players all the time. For those with the brains and the drive, it is definitely possible, but it will never be a walk in the park. Richard.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. It's incredibly difficult. It's kind of like saying, I play football with my buddies on weekends. How hard would it be for me to get to the NFL? Well, the answer is incredibly hard, and almost nobody can do it. But there are a few people who actually get to the NFL. Takes an incredible. Now, I would say it is easier to become a professional gambler than to get to the NFL, but it's still going to require thousands of hours of study and practice and work to do it. And let's say you pick something. Let's say you decide to pick card counting. Well, it's one thing to learn how to become a professional card, I mean, a competent card counter, but then it's a whole nother thing to learn to actually make a living at it. You need a very large bankroll, and you need to be willing to live out of a suitcase and be on the road constantly, and you need to have the emotional bankroll to handle swings of losing tens of thousands of dollars and getting thrown out of casinos. And yeah, it's just incredibly difficult. That being said, almost every single professional gambler I know starts with one thing, but they all branch out and end up, almost all of them get involved in doing other forms of advantage play. So the card counter might pick up video poker, and they might get into sports betting, or so most people do end up branching out.
And our last question for today. I recently was playing an even money match play promotion at a craps table in Vegas. I made a come bet, and an 11 was rolled. I then was told that my bet was null and void, that the only bet I can make at the table for match play is the pass line. While I can't prove it, I'm confident that if a 2, 3, or 12 were rolled, they would have said my bet lost. How should I have handled this? Would you threaten to call gaming? And my answer is probably the coupon had wording on it, on the face of it saying it was good for pass line only. With that said, if it wasn't disallowed before the roll, the casino is probably taking a shot. You can't win on this. The best you can do is tie. With that said, how big of a bet was this? Let's assume it's a 50-50 bet. If it was a $5 match play bet and you were out there with your own $5 chip, half the time you lose your $5 in the coupon and half the time you get your money back, whereas they should have paid you $10. So you end up losing 250 on average instead of winning 750 on average. So it costs you $5. Are you going to go to the mat for $5? You might possibly win, but they will remember you and never let you play another such coupon. Possibly a better strategy is to let it go, play by the rules on the face of the coupon next time, and not burn this casino over something so trivial. Richard.
Yeah, and I mean, do you want to spend 2 hours or 3 hours of your life over 250, calling gaming? And I mean, dealers hate match play players, so it would not surprise me if the dealer was deliberately screwing with you by not telling you that, hey, you can't bet that on the come; it has to be on the pass line. But yeah, it's just not worth the time and effort. And
All right. So those are all the questions we have time for today. Please keep sending them in at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or send them to Richard or me individually. Or Richard has a Twitter address at hashtag RW Munchkin. Is that right?
No. It's not hashtag. It's at RWM21 is my Twitter.
I was really close.
Yeah.
Okay. So, at the end of our show, we have a recommended. So, Richard, what do you have for us today?
I don't have a recommended myself, but, you know, we solicited our listeners to send us their recommendeds. And I got one yesterday, actually, on a particular rubber band. Which rubber band was it? Number 32?
It was Advantage. Advantage. The brand was Advantage, and it's number 32.
Advantage number 32 rubber bands. Now, for table games players, actually video poker too, you know, we all carry a lot of cash, and most of us carry it with rubber bands wrapped around it. My preferred method is to take $5,000, separate it into five $1,000 packets, fold each of those, and then put them together into a little brick and wrap it with a rubber band. And these Advantage number 32s are apparently the perfect rubber band for wrapping these five packs. So I personally, I don't think I've ever bought rubber bands. I end up going to the cashier's cage and when I'm cashing out saying, do you have any rubber bands? And they throw me half a dozen. But, you know, as the listener pointed out, sometimes they're too thin and they snap, or they're way too big, or, you know, they're too tight, whatever. So he tells me that Advantage number 32 is the perfect rubber band. So there you go. That's from our listeners.
All right. And mine is a recent movie I watched called Here Today. This one stars Billy Crystal. And he plays Charlie Bunce, an aging, very successful comedy writer who is moderately estranged from his children. Charlie meets Emma Page, who is a young black singer with sass and attitude, played by Tiffany Haddish. As Charlie's mental situation declines from dementia, he and Emma have their unlikely relationship built. It's a movie that'll make you laugh and cry and think. So I think it's out. I don't know. I saw it at Free Movies at Harris. We were recently at a Harris, and they give 7 stars, one movie a night. And so Bonnie and I took advantage of that. And so, but I think it was released in July of this year. I had not heard of it. I like Billy Crystal. You will laugh, and it's thought provoking. All right. Keep sending in our questions. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.